We are at the headquarters of Sympathetic Vibratory Physics Research in La Junta, Colorado. With us is Dale Pond.
Hi, Michael. Glad you could come by and visit.
Well, it's good to see you. First question is, what is it that got you started on this path?
That's too long a story, Michael. I just stumbled on John Keeley's work when I was visiting the Casey Library in Virginia Beach. And I found Keeley's biography, and I knew that that was what I wanted to do.
Almost obsessed to bring the Keeley knowledge to the public. It's been 22 years, and we've made a lot of progress.
I would say so. The artifacts you've built, particularly the dinospheres, are spectacular. There's no other word for it. You know, even if they didn't do a thing, I think they would be great artwork. What do they do from your viewpoint?
Well, they do a number of things. They do not yet rotate. We have had rotational movement, but we haven't had consistent rotation yet. We figure as we understand more and more about what Keeley did and how he did it, we'll eventually achieve consistent rotation when we want it. In the meantime, they kind of serendipitously do other things that no one ever expected. They just started doing it. And it opened up a whole new avenue of research that goes back to the original Keeley research, where he worked with mind energy. He harnessed mind force in his machines. And we're discovering that these dinospheres really do have mind force in them. And what we've seen is people being healed of physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual conditions. And so that when we started seeing those healings take place, almost spontaneous, well, they were spontaneous, that began another research where we wanted to understand how and what was going on.
Okay. Do you feel like you have more of a handle on what it is that's going on with these healings?
Yeah, we kind of understand some of that. We need to go into the very nature of what health is, what healing is, what disease is, and it all comes from, it all boils down to mind, the state of mind of the person involved. If they're beating up on themselves, they're going to show some sign of disease.
I get the impression that leads to the idea that some people sometimes don't want to be healed.
That's true. We've noticed over the years that not everyone is affected the same way when they're near one of these dinospheres. And it seems to be that only those who are ready and willing to be healthy, to let go of whatever it is they're beating themselves up with, they are the only ones that are affected in a positive way. Other people can stand there and seem not to be affected any way, shape, or form.
I've personally witnessed at least one case where somebody seemed to react quite negatively in the presence of one of the dinospheres. I think that was an interesting anomaly connected with that particular person who I got to know fairly well, and that's an interesting aspect of this too, that each person is going to bring to this something absolutely unique.
Well, it all it does is remind you of who you are, and I've never personally seen a negative reaction. Those people who are extremely disturbed on the inside will react the strongest. And they may interpret what's going on in a negative fashion, but if they sit back and look at it, they will realize that this is a gift to them to better understand who they are.
Wow. My understanding is that Keeley, after researching a lot about mind, went on to build some pretty amazing artifacts. There were witnesses who saw him create levitation effects with some of his machines, and it was quite a show, really, but then in the end he was accused of fraud, and he was accused of having done some pretty outrageous things and manipulating stock with his company and all that stuff. And some of his notes were lost. It took quite a while to recover them, and I think you've done probably a better job than anybody else on the planet of recovering his notes and organizing them in a form that works. What principles was Keeley using outside of what we understand as mind in terms of, say, physical science?
Well, I want to address some of the other things, some of the things you just said. One is Keeley never manipulated the stock of his company. The other people in the company did that to him. They basically forced him to sell his own stock so they could manipulate it. And I never found any of Keeley's notes. I have found lots of newspaper articles and magazine articles and other things that other people have written, but I've never found anything that Keeley himself has written other than that what has been quoted in these articles.
Oh.
Okay, so I've never found Keeley's notes, and I don't know anyone who has.
Well, I somehow had the impression that you had, because I've seen all those definitions, terms that were created and put in your databases, and I didn't realize they had come from sources other than Keeley himself.
No, they came from Keeley himself, but they were embedded in articles that other people had written.
And so you extracted them and put them in order for the first time.
Yeah, I've combed through that literature for years.
Yeah, well, I mean, the results are impressive. The 40 laws that are now codified, put in order, that's quite a resource in itself, and I see that as something that other researchers could use if they apply themselves to studying it.
That's true. To comprehend what Keeley was doing, specifically if you look at those 40 laws, which when you first read them, they are quite mysterious because they don't seem to have any bearing on standard physics. But as you begin to understand what the man was talking about, and if you take the time and effort to read Russell and what he was trying to talk about, and Casey, all three of these men were writing about the exact same thing from three different perspectives. So it's a wonderful opportunity to learn and understand these principles. Once you've done that, then you can read those 40 laws and they start making all kinds of sense.
That's what I found in reading them. They really do have a coherency to them. Of course, the language in these laws is somewhat archaic from our viewpoint. We've had too many changes in our English language in the past 100 years. And yet when you take the trouble to understand that type of language and get into the principles themselves and try to visualize what it is he was talking about, there really is an underlying sensibility to it. And I see the correlations between the work of Walter Russell and Edgar Casey in all of this.
Yeah, they're all the same stuff. In fact, you can go from one to the other to verify what you thought you read in the first one. And that has been one of my chief tools for driving an understanding of what's going on here.
Besides the dinospheres themselves, what key resources that you provide would be of greatest interest to, say, a beginning researcher?
We've uncovered the basic principles behind sound and vibration, physics, the science of it, and that kind of material is hard to come by. Which has proven to be the case, and I've managed to amass quite a bit of material in that area, which would help anyone who's interested in any aspect of sound and vibration, whether it's music or therapy or engineering. And then with the dinospheres doing what they're doing, that forces us to start looking at mind and the physics of mind and what that whole field is about. And Walter Russell exposed quite a bit of it, but it hadn't been brought into standard physics, standard science. But that's what we're doing with the acoustic research. I am very fortunate to have started this study with the basics of vibration because that's where all these things tie together.
Okay. Yeah, I know you've written at least a couple of books and quite a few smaller articles that are all available through your catalog, and the variety of materials available in that catalog is really astounding to me. It's quite a roundup there.
Yeah, we try to provide to whoever wants it the most useful information that we can put together. Some of it may appear to be archaic, some of it may appear to be exoteric or esoteric, but it's still useful and still applicable to those who want to pursue a better understanding of who they are and their relationship to the universe.
That's ultimately what it seems to come down to in a lot of this. Of course, we have an energy crisis at the time of this recording, theoretically, and yet people are still going out and doing whatever they do, and they're just adjusting in various ways. And sometimes I feel like this crisis is forcing some people into a higher consciousness. They're actually having to look at their underlying assumptions. What are some of the underlying assumptions of your physics? You've mentioned mind and vibration as cornerstones of this. What are some other underlying assumptions that you feel should be brought out?
Well, the strangest one, or the one that sounds the strangest to most people, put it that way, is this principle called love. Because we don't really, the general public has no comprehension of what this four-letter word means. In terms of physics, it's got an entirely precise and powerful meaning and application. It has to do with the harmonization of vibrations, which is to say chords in concordance. And they're nowadays, leading edge quantum science has coined a new phrase called quantum entanglement, which is really nothing more than a relabeling of the old concept called sympathetic vibration, which is just a big word for love.
Love is interesting because in the context you're talking about, it's not local, it's not forceful, it's existent, and it's certainly powerful. And there is a difference between forceful and powerful in this context.
That's true. That's absolutely true. Love is not a forceful force. It is a powerful force, but it is not a forcing force. And you can tell that when you play with children, in that when you're all in a state of love and giving and forgiving and you're playing back and forth and everything, it's a wonderful experience. But the minute someone reverts to a selfish stance, like, for instance, what about me? Boom, the whole thing goes to pot.
That's certainly true.
So what's involved there? What's involved there are focuses of mind, which we sometimes call thought patterns or thought forms, and they can be positive, which is to say loving, or they can be negative, which is fear-causing, fear-based, and it puts things apart. Well, right there is the definition of a vibratory action, where you have contraction and expansion. And Walter Russell went into the explanation of it in extensive writings, and it's one of the principles of the universe, one of the main principles of the universe, which is contracting to the center in a form of love, or centropy, or as Bearden likes to call it, negentropy. Mm-hmm. And then you have the other state of being, which is the expansive entropic chaos motion of the universe, which, by the way, is the only side of the universal actions that modern science recognizes, which is destruction.
Yeah, it seems like they're really good at creating explosions, and when you start studying other parts of this advanced research and technology, you'll find that implosions are quite common in the universe, but not so common in our technology right now. As a matter of fact, our automobile technology is all based on explosions, for example.
Well, almost all modern science is based on the concept of entropy, which they hold to be one of the prevailing laws of the universe, that the universe is always running down. And we can just look out there in the universe and see, well, if it's been running down for 4 billion years, when's it going to stop running down?
And, of course, every single living being is a demonstration of something different from entropy.
Well, you take an ovum, a fertilized ovum, it's microscopic in size, and yet it centralizes around itself the nutrients, the water, the elements, all the stuff it needs to grow into these huge bodies that we have. Now, that's not running down. That's forming. That's a formative force. That's a centropic force. You take an acorn, a seed of any kind of tree, it's a little tiny bitty seed, you put it in the ground in the right conditions, it brings to itself more and more and more of what it needs to be what it is. Now, that's not running down. At a certain point, it starts to run down, which we term old age.
Even old age is a very interesting concept in itself. Sometimes I think, in working with some of the elderly patients that I work with in doing music, that they're just getting tired of being in that same body and would like to try something else.
They're mostly bored.
There's a lot of that, yeah.
Their mind is they haven't learned to excite their mind and to be excited by the little things of life. Somewhere in these old sacred texts, they talk about, unless you are like children, whatever that phrase is, the rest of it, and look at a child. They will be outside, and they are excited about a simple leaf falling off a tree. And we have lost that excitement, that ability to excite ourselves with the simple things of life. And when you have that, you jump out of bed because everything is new to you every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's exciting to be alive. But when you become bored with it, oh, I've seen all the leaves fall off all the trees, and I don't want to go see that. And we start becoming highly negative and destructive to any kind of positive flow.
It's one of the reasons why I like dinospheres, because it's a strange phenomenon. This is my personal impression, that every time I get near one, it seems like I'm seeing it for the first time. Every time I glance over, it's different somehow. Even though it's just sitting there on the table, it hasn't moved, but there's something about that beauty and that balance and that construction that creates the idea of freshness and newness.
It's appealing to you. There's a communication going on between you and a dinosphere of what some people call an etheric level communication. And what that really means is just there's communication of mind. So when you look at it, you see beauty. Well, they are beautiful. And that beauty, that concept of beauty, excites you on the higher levels.
Yeah. And that's part of what any art is about. It's just that this art form, this dinosphere art form, as it were, is consistent. And that's nice. It's a medium that gives you a nice focus, I think.
And great art is art that inspires you, that triggers something inside of you to respond just like you're doing.
Yeah, it certainly inspired a lot of music. It's time to go ahead and wrap this up. And do you have any closing thoughts? And here's our closing theme song for today. I want to thank you, Dale, for being part of this. Go ahead and say your address and web contact information into the interview.
You can contact us through our website, www.svpviril.com. We have forums there. We have masses and masses of information. You can explore the dinospheres or the basics of vibration, or you can get into this new field of mind force. It's all there.
Well, thank you very much, Dale.
Thank you, Michael.